This is Russ Chianelli welcoming you to Science Studio. Keith Pannell is traveling right now, so today we're going to be talking about circadian rhythms. And in order to do that, we have with us Dr. Sung-Hee Yeo, known as Sally. She's the Associate Professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at McGovern Medical School, University of Texas. Welcome to Science Studio.
Thank you.
And so one of the things is that we're, our fans out there are our students and parents and faculty members. And we always like to ask our guests, how did you get into science when you were a kid? Think back about when you were 10.
I guess the most important person who found my talent as a scientist was my dad. So I was the kid that whenever I see something, pen or TV or radio, I like to take it apart and trying to figure out what's inside.
So you deconstruct it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I always try to put it back because I was afraid that they were going to scolding at me. I was almost able to put it back, but always one or two things missing or it's not working well.
So but when I think, your dad came home, the television set was in 1,000 parts all over the room?
Not that bad, but still pretty bad. I kind of broke a lot of his precious things. But he kind of figured that that's my talent.
He was very interested in encouraging you, right?
Uh-huh. And at high school time, I really was into car and engines and stuff. So I told him one day that, Daddy, I want to be a mechanic. Because I really love to take it apart and figure things out and all these things. And I think he was shocked. And he didn't want his daughter to be a mechanic. So from that point, he kind of persuaded me that, how about biology?
Well, that's quite interesting, too, because when I was in high school, too, that's all I did was mechanic.
Oh, I see, I see.
You know, I had all these tools and worked, and people from the high school used to come and ask me to fix their cars and so on and so forth. Uh-huh. But that's a different story. So you are from South Korea, is that correct?
Yes.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about where you were born and what your dad was doing and so on?
So I born in Seoul. So most of South Korean here, you hear Seoul, the largest city capital in Seoul. And my dad, he's banker. He worked for the bank and he studied economics. So he has no science background. My mother is English major, so we have no science trait in our family. But I kind of have that talent very early on. So I think he kind of noticed that.
Well, do you remember the first thing that you disassembled?
His precious pen that he got it as a gift from
a
very important person. It was a really expensive one, but I broke it.
Well, that's quite interesting, you know, because we always ask our guests, how did they get into it? Did you ever have any other choices? You wanted to be a mechanic, but later on, when you decided bioscience, I mean, there were a lot of opportunities in bioscience. Did you ever want to be an MD, for example?
I wanted to be an MD, but my daddy, he again, kind of disagreed with me because he say I'm not detached enough. And he say I'm too personal and emotional. And when I really focus with one thing, I don't look around, which is a typical science geek style. So he say maybe it will be hard for you. And I think he's really right.
Yeah, I had a chance to go to medical school too. And I always ask the students, do you want to go to medical school because you want to help people, or did your grandmother tell you you had to go? Think about it. I don't regret that. I mean, I was always fascinated in my basement with the chemistry. Okay, so then after that, you went to school in, tell us a little bit about how you got your degree.
So I graduate biology department in Ewha Women's University. So that's actually the largest women's university in Korea. So all students are women, and it's one of the really good school in Korea because it's kind of funny history that all these parents feel safer when their daughters are all in girls' school. But it's very independent. It was very unique experience for me because it's all girls, and then there is no one to really help us because it's all girls. Even if you do need to do heavy lifting or all these other things, we help each other. So when I later went to my graduate school, I realized that the girls from other university is like less independent than us because we have no boys around. So we just need to figure things out by ourselves.
So then you went to that place, and when you were there, you were thinking about biology and what you would do?
Yeah, I was bio major, and I was really fascinated about all these classes, biology and biochemistry, molecular biology.
Did you ever think about ancient species and evolution and all those kinds of things?
Evolution was really fascinating, but I feel like that's just too big that I cannot really understand very well. So I wanted some system that I can really dig in and understand.
Tell us a little bit about what happened next.
So I went to graduate school in a different city, and that was kind of institute funded by government funding. So every student get fellowship, and then you just decide your major. It's only science institute. And I was really happy. That's one of the best schools in Korea, and all the smart kids are there. So I was frustrated at the beginning because everyone there is smart. But later I realized that I like what I'm doing, and I was studying about like some protease enzyme. And then one day I was just flipping like journals and things, and one article really just caught my eyes, and I cannot just stop thinking about it. And that was Dr. Takahashi's first mammalian clock gene cloning paper in 1997. So he found first mammalian clock gene by doing ENU mutagenesis, screening mouse, tons of mice, and find this long circadian period mice.
Well, I think for our audience, who are not experts like you are, can you explain the process a little bit?
So the ENU is strong chemical generating mutation in the genome. So when you inject ENU to animal will going to get all the mutation. And then you breed this mutant animal, produce F1, F2, and then you screen this progeny with circadian wheel running behavior. So basically you are looking for mouse has longer than 24-hour or shorter than 24-hour behavior cycle. So basically, you generate a bunch of mutant mice and then put them on a mouse cage with wheel, and they will do the experiment for you. And then months later, you can tell, okay, you are the mutant, and then find out which gene is mutated.
So and how do you find out which gene is mutated? I mean, I can see the mice running around, and I think that sometimes there's like a maze, and some get out faster and some never get out.
Mm-hmm. So this mutant phenotype is very, very robust and is transmissible. So their F1, we're going to have the same period.
F1.
Yes, their progeny. So when you cross mouse with female or male, and then back then there was no like this next generation sequencing stuff. So they had to do recombination and then mapping. So it was really brutal effort. The whole lab of 30 people focused on finding that gene. And then he was successful enough to find that gene in time before his lab bankrupt and then publish a really amazing paper. And that caught my eyes. And then I told my advisor that, look, I'm really fascinated about the circadian behavior, and I really want to go there and then study this. And my advisor was generous enough to let me go, actually. That was my first year of PhD, but he said, okay, if you want to go, and then go there and learn these things. So I contact Dr. Takahashi, and at the time, he was in Northwestern University. So a year later, I joined Northwestern University and then start my circadian research.
Sally, tell us again now, how do you see the behavior? Is it a maze that they run around in? Or?
So it's a wheel.
A wheel.
Uh-huh. So it's like a
Ferris
little
wheel.
Little toy wheel that any rodent can run.
Yeah.
And then when they run this wheel, there is a switch that we collect how many revolutions per minute they run. And then computer just collect this running signal. And then mouse are nocturnal animals, so they don't run during day. They only run when the lights
dark.
Off. So you see this light-dark, very strong, night-concentrated behavior. But when you turn off the light, no cue, their endogenous clock reveal. They exactly get up same time of their own time and start running during the night, and they stop running during the day.
So how do you tell which ones are injured and which ones are injured?
Is
maybe the wrong way of saying it, but where the modifications have occurred.
Because the mouse circadian clock is very precisely 23.5 hours. So if you leave them constant condition, constant dark, they will show the rhythmicity of 23.5 hours. They exactly get up that time and start running. So you see the rhythmicity, and then we are looking for mutant mice who break that rhythmicity. Some mice totally arrhythmic, some mice longer period than 24 hours, shorter period than 24 hours. We call that mutant.
Well, that's extremely interesting, and it makes me wonder, I hate getting up in the morning. Do I have a genetic problem?
So human circadian clock is very, very similar with mouse. And we have all different tau, means different period. Some people have long tau. That means your one day is actually longer than 24 hours. So it's hard to get up early in the morning, but it's easy to stay up late when your tau is longer than 24 hours. When your period is shorter than 24 hours, it's easy for you to get up early in the morning, but hard for you to stay up late because your tau is short.
Yeah, I see that. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So have you extended this to human behavior?
Yes, I'm studying human, but it's hard to really ground one person in the like a no light, constant darkness or constant light and measure their activity. Back then, it's like only 1950 or 60. Some volunteer people, like mostly scientists, they did that. They go down to cave and then they just have no cue at all. And then they measure their free running activity. So those studies possible, but we normally these days use human fibroblast or blood sample to monitor their circadian rhythm.
Yeah, I guess a lot of you out there would not like to run on a wheel in the dark.
Just by activity record.
By activity record, okay. So I think this is quite interesting because I know I've been reading some articles about how people's attitudes are also imprinted. And there were certain tests that they were giving, which were screening tests to see whether you had a basic racism, for example.
I see.
And I don't know about those tests. They were talking about how they measured different people with different races and how sometimes the people would always answer the questions negative if they didn't like the race. What did that person do? And do you know anything about those kinds of tests? Or they're pretty new. It's just in the paper.
I guess it's hard to answer because we don't have that kind of study in the circadian field yet. Like in terms of genetic modification by circadian rhythm. Like people like to study siesta in Spain because it's such a traditional habit that they always take a break during the afternoon, right? And that definitely influences your circadian rhythm and it definitely influences your mood and attitude. So there is that study.
Okay, right now we're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a moment with Sally, Dr. Sung-Hee Yu.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. David Niesel.
And I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog. Oh, man, my back's been killing me.
That's nothing. My shoulder is radiating pain, and my knees. Oh, boy, we sound like a couple of old guys.
That's because we are, Dave. The other day, a friend of mine and I were comparing our MRI experiences, and it got me thinking about an amazing new development in this technology.
MRI is short for magnetic resonance imaging and can allow us to see soft tissue such as organs and cancerous tumors. Scientists have wondered if they could use it to study how molecules interact inside cells in real time. It can.
One technique is called magnetic resonance spectroscopy. It can detect cellular structures down to 10 micrometers. That's the size of one of our red blood cells.
Scientists have used it to study structures inside tissues and cells, but they still couldn't observe the molecules in them.
That's about to change with the magnetic resonance microscope. Its sensor is composed of nitrogen atoms dispersed on a diamond film.
These nitrogen atoms give off a fluorescent color when placed in a strong magnetic field. The colors they produce is what allows scientists to know which atoms are nearby because each constellation of atoms is unique.
That means they can use the emitted fluorescence to identify the precise biochemical molecules that are interacting. They tell which biomolecules are binding, how they're changing from these interactions, and other aspects of cell metabolism.
It's incredible to be able to watch biochemical reactions in living cells as they happen. The long-term impact is significant, one day allowing us incredible new ways to understand disease.
We are Drs. David Niesel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
We're back now again, and that was a very interesting discussion that we had about circadian rhythm. Why don't you tell us what's going to happen in the future? Where do you think this is going to go?
So circadian rhythm was actually observed by many scientists back in 17th century or 18th century by just observation of plants showing the circadian rhythm and some animals showing the circadian rhythm. And by Seymour Benzer and Kanoka, they identify the Drosophila mutant that they have a weird circadian rhythm, not 24 hour, longer or shorter or arrhythmic. And then in 90s, people, including Dr. Takahashi, start finding the mammalian circadian genes. And now we know that the circadian system in Drosophila and mouse is extremely conserved in human too. So we understand the mechanism of circadian rhythm, and now we are about to really applying this into human health and well-being, that how misregulated circadian rhythm is affecting human disease and well-being. For example, we are living in this age that everything is 24 hours, 7 days a week, and because of this light that we can control, we are ignoring our biological clock, and doesn't matter, there's a right all the time, so you can work all the time. But our body doesn't tell you like that. So our body clock is designed to make your system very efficient according to the light-dark cycle. So when there is a light, there is a things that you are efficiently doing. And there were, when there is no light, when you are sleeping, you should not eat, you should not hear some music, or you should not have those stimulation. We designed to be that way from the beginning of the Earth because of the Earth rotation. We have 24-hour, 12-hour, 12-hour light-dark cycle. So we have this built-in clock that tells you what to do in the right timing, but we are ignoring it. And as a consequence, you have compromised your health. So we are trying to apply, okay, maintaining your clock and listen to your body clock is the most important magic pill for maintaining your well-being. And I think a lot of human disease-related study we're going to be coming out very soon.
Well, that's very interesting what you're saying because having visited Alaska and various places too, it must be different if you're near the equator or if you're in the North Pole historically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah, there is a lot of interesting human case study related with Antarctica, North Pole, because their light dark cycle is really messed up. And they do have a lot of chronic disease-related migraine and then mood disorder. And we kind of nailing down that the basis of those diseases, disruption of circadian rhythm because of their light dark cycle.
I see. So that's why some of the natives up there sort of go down into their, tents. They dig a hole and sleep where it's dark.
Yes, yes, yes.
I know being up there for me when I was up there for a couple of months was very strange because you would walk into, let's say, a place where you could get a drink. At 11 o'clock, the light was still up.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, and there were people, acting normal. And then all of a sudden, you try to go to bed or something like that. And again, the light was up at 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess that means we should all move to the equator where everything is even.
My suggestion is do the right thing in the right timing. So recently, also because of a lot of metabolic disease, because this excessive calorie intake, the obesity is the major disease in at least America. So interesting experiment. So when you give high-fat diet to mouse, group A, you give high-fat diet during nighttime only because that's their active phase. And then the other control group, you just give high-fat diet throughout the day. By just restricting the time of diet intake, even if you get the same calorie, the body weight show very big difference. So if you're eating high-fat diet during the right time, for human it's during day, your body is ready to digest and burn energy much efficiently than nighttime. Because nighttime, your body is shutting down all this enzyme and physiology to get ready to sleep. So therefore, you are mostly storing your calorie intake.
So that means that if you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and eat a candy bar, that's bad.
That's not too good.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So do you think that there's going to be, you know, things that you could take to change your circadian rhythm or make it longer or shorter?
I think that's every circadian biologist's dream, that you can take this magic pill and then you can kind of change your rhythm. So we are working on that. And so far, melatonin is good candidate.
Melatonin.
Yes, but it depends on really individual, because some individuals don't have melatonin receptors. So some person don't respond to melatonin. So a lot of drug is being developed now that how you can boost your circadian rhythm or how you can shift your circadian rhythm.
Yeah, I wonder which way is the right way. You want to make it longer so you sleep better?
So the circadian rhythm kind of dampening along with your aging process. So when you're young, robust, your circadian rhythm amplitude is also very robust. But like a human case study or mouse behavior study, people say that aging process dampen the circadian rhythm. Or, for example, high-fat diet dampen the circadian rhythm. So maintaining or boosting your circadian rhythm amplitude actually helps a lot, because it's like a switch. When you have really good amplitude, all the switch can be turned on at the same time and turn off at the same time. But if you don't have robust amplitude, they're kind of on and off here and there and not synchronized.
So, I mean, we're reaching the end there pretty soon. And we'd like to know that you were born and raised in South Korea, as we said, and then you came to the United States here. You could tell us a little bit about why you wound up in the United States. But also, would you find any differences between South Koreans and people in the United States with a circadian rhythm?
So the second question, the circadian rhythm between different countries, I don't think it's very different. And I think the reason why I'm here is because of the circadian rhythm research. I was in Dr. Takahashi's lab for a long time, and after that, I found a lab that I can study circadian rhythm. And South Korea is a good environment, but not many circadian biologists there. So here we have really big pool of circadian biologists that I can work together and doing cool things together. So that's why I choose to be here.
Is there any other questions in biology that you wish you had more time to study? Or is it you just focused completely on circadian rhythm?
Even circadian rhythm is actually too big for me to understand still after all that year. So I will be still focusing on circadian rhythm study in the future.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that makes me think about this is there something in us biologically that says we're going to evolve to a higher level? The survival of the fittest, I know, is one thing, but survival of the fittest really was basically who's going to attack me out in the desert. Mm. But is there a biological reason for improving properties of the body, you know, mind, body? Do we know that?
So there was an interesting example that a couple of scientists released mice, laboratory mice, into the just wilderness, so wild-type mice, and then clock mutant mice. And then a year later, they kind of collect or trace that how many mice survived. And wild-type survival was much better than circadian clock mutant mice because their clock is messed up. They don't know how to survive in the right timing. So definitely contribute even for the survivor in case of animal. And then for human, I think if you have very robust circadian rhythm, your lifestyle will going to be very, very regular and then like kind of robust and precise. You can really rely on your clock to do the right thing in the right timing. And then also it helps the cognition. When your clock is really accurate, you have very good cognition ability during the day. So everything is connected, and therefore the circadian clock is very important to maintain for your survivor.
Yeah, no, I can understand that too. And I'm wondering too, as we're reaching the end of this particular show, is there any modification in the circadian rhythm for summer and winter?
So that's a very good question. So throughout the year, our day length change. So that's in the area of circannual, which is annual rhythm. So we are about to understand our daily rhythm. And then the annual rhythm is something bigger than circadian rhythm that we need to explore and study more.
So we really don't know the answer to that question, is what you're saying.
We know some, but it's really hard to study the annual rhythm because it takes the whole year.
Yeah, right.
So if
right.
you are using animal model that going through the annual cycle, it takes 10 years to get like a 10 cycle.
Oh, boy, you're right about that, too.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're reaching the end of the show. Is there anything else you would like to tell the people out there, you know, about the you know, students and so on, and this is really a fascinating field, or anything that comes to mind?
I really like to encourage students to study the basic science because basic science is the foundation and your strength to understand any translational medicine field that you're interested in the future. So circadian is very, very physiological basic part. And then if you understand this kind of basic science, you can apply into anything in the down the line.
So you're saying to the students out there, which of course we all agree to, is that if you're going to be interested in this topic, you better pay attention to your chemistry and physics and math as you grow up.
Yeah. When I was undergraduate school, biochemistry and chemistry is really hard because at the beginning you have to memorize a lot. And you really think that this is the subject that you just memorize it. And before I really memorized everything, all the equation and structure and everything, I agree with that. But after I understand all these nitty-gritty components, suddenly those dots become connected. And then later it makes sense. So after you overcome the initial barrier, I think you will experience this like a eye-opening experience that, wow, finally all this complicated physiological process makes sense because I understand this detail.
Well, finally, I would like to ask you the following question. Some time ago, a famous Nobel Prize winner, whose name escapes me at the moment, was asked the following question. He said, how do you pick your students? Well, let me ask you first, how would you pick your students? What would you look for?
Just like as I was, I look for a student who is curious about things. I want my student who is suffering because of her or his experiment is not working and think about it and then come back to me that maybe we can try this.
So I think that was a good way to end, and I want to thank Dr. Sung-hee Yu, assistant professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, the University of Texas. Thank you very much, and I want to thank Loren Terrazas, our producer, and ask you all to tune in to Science Studio. Thanks, Sally.
Thank you. Thank you very much.